We started a sermon series last week that we have entitled A Haunted Christmas, A Haunted Christmas. And I know, as I said last week, for some people that sounds like we're mixing holiday themes a little bit. But for many of us, that's exactly what Christmas is, right? It's a season to be, to remember, you know, the things that are, that haunt us. A lot of people have haunted Decembers every year by things that they can't control that are in their lives. And for many people, a haunted Christmas is an annual reality. And so we're using that theme to talk about three topics over the next 3 weeks. Now, I told you last week that the idea of a haunted Christmas, even though we're taking it our direction, is actually a cultural thing. You can think of a famous fictional character, the Charles Dickens classic novel, A Christmas Carol, and his character, Ebenezer Scrooge, who experienced a haunted Christmas. And we talked about that a little bit. He was haunted by four ghosts, right? Four ghosts. Marley, his old partner, and then the ghost of Christmas past, present, and yet to come. And if you like that story, I love the Christmas Carol. In fact, last night at our house, we watched, some of us who were there watched my favorite rendition of A Christmas Carol. There are several renditions of Christmas Carols and of that book turned into film. Everyone has a different opinion about what's the best, I suppose, but only one opinion is right, and that is mine. And that is the 1984 version with George C. Scott playing Ebenezer Scrooge, phenomenal. That movie is just so powerful, not only for just the great lessons, it's always challenging. I find it challenging on a personal level of the kind of man I want to be. And well-acted, beautiful lines that Charles Dickens wrote that they've incorporated into the script. It's just so beautiful. Now, I've been told lately by several people that I need to try out A Muppet Christmas Carol. I've never watched it, but I've heard it so many times, I'm going to give it a whirl and see if it's as good. Jen says yes, Joey says no. Oh, I haven't, no. So, okay, so that's one more person. Two more people telling me I need to get with the program, so I will find out. But for now, George C. Scott, 1984, is the best version of A Christmas Carol. But we're talking about a haunted Christmas today, and I hope that this will help you. Now, last week, let me just review real quick. Last week, we discussed the ghosts of Christmas past, and we specifically talked about how that, for so many people, Christmas today isn't what it used to be. Christmas today is different because life has changed. It could be that the kids grew up and moved out. And for some of you, that's not your situation. You're still raising a young family, and this is the best time. Maybe it's stressful, but you'll miss it one day. But for some people, it's over. It's gone. The kids are grown and gone. Or maybe there are people who have walked out of your life and have left you, and Christmas is a reminder of who's not there anymore. However, last week, we specifically applied this specifically to people who've lost loved ones to death. And Christmas is a reminder that they are no longer with us, and you're sad every holiday season because they are no longer here. And so we talked about the ghosts of Christmas past. Now, I know that when we preached that last week, I realized that for some of you, that's not your situation. Everyone you love is still alive and everything is fine, and last week was not helpful to you because you're not in that boat. I want to say a couple things to you. First of all, thank God for that if that's your situation. Number two, it's coming. That sermon might not help you today, but at some point in your future, you will need that truth down the line. And third of all, for a whole lot of people, that's really relevant right now. And so if you're one of those people who are struggling with loss of a loved one, I hope last week helped you. And if you're not there yet, you will be one day. Thank God for what you have, but remember the truth for later. Today, I want to talk about the ghosts of Christmas present. And like last week, this will apply more to some of us than it will to others of us. But the ghosts of Christmas present are different. Last week, it was the people who are no longer with us that we wish they were still with us. Today, we're talking about those people that we wish weren't with us, but they're coming anyhow, right? They're showing up on Christmas Eve, and they're going to be there, right? So whereas we mourned those we've lost that we missed last week, today we're going to talk about those people that you would like to miss a little bit more than you do, but they're coming over for ham and gravy, okay? So here's the deal. The ghost of Christmas present is a real struggle for many people because for so many of us, there's loved ones and there's tension, and it's always there all year long, and you might live close to them and you can't get away from it. They might live far away, but then there's holidays. You might see them on social media and it drives you crazy. I understand the ghosts of Christmas present are the people who will be present this holiday season and make it challenging to have peace on earth. And it could be anybody. It could be a mom or dad, perhaps. Maybe you grew up in a home where your parents, they split up and you felt one of them abandoned you, and now they're around and crystals remind you of what it wasn't, and it's still sore and sensitive and it makes you mad. And when you see them, you don't understand still. Or perhaps you were verbally or physically abused along the way, and getting together at Christmas is a reminder of how unpleasant growing up was, or how negligent those relationships were by a dysfunctional mom or dad or both. Or perhaps you're a parent whose children grew up and they went on a different path of life than you wished they would. They made bad choices, and you hurt for them, and you're frustrated because you care about them, but you're also frustrated that you raised them better than you thought, and maybe you're embarrassed and you don't understand, and maybe it's just nothing horrible. Maybe it's just they see life differently than you do, and you don't understand how they can see life differently than you do because you raised them that way. I mean, you see life differently than your parents did, but that's different, you know. So, but you struggle with your kids because of where they are in life, and that's hard. Or maybe you struggle with a sibling that, you know, you fought with a lot. A lot of people fight with their siblings when they're little, and then they love each other when they're adults. But some siblings grow up to adulthood, and in those early adulthood years, when they're starting to get married and have families, and they're still immature and young, as we all are, they begin to have some fights with each other about how things are done, and then bad blood starts, and it sometimes doesn't get better for years, unfortunately. Or perhaps it's that it's not your siblings or your parents or your kids, it's that crazy Uncle Jim and Aunt Sue. I try to pick safe names. Hopefully no one has an Uncle Jim and Aunt Sue here that feels like I'm. But you have that crazy Uncle Jim and Aunt Sue that come around, and you're like, oh boy, here they are, because it's going to be, they're the ones, and Uncle Jim is, Aunt Sue's got to pick at how you raise your kids and nitpick at how you do life, and Uncle Jim's going to argue about politics and religion and everything else, and you just can't, there they come. Now, I don't know if you have anyone, I shouldn't pick on names because I might name somebody, so for example, if you have an Uncle Joey and Aunt Jen, and they're just very, you know, very difficult, I mean, you know, I understand. So here's the thing. If you have dysfunctional family getting together, the ghosts of Christmas present are going to haunt you in about 2 weeks or 1 week. Wow, a week and a half here. So here's what I want to say to you. You can have a happy Christmas and not a haunted one, but you've got to know how to navigate those difficulties. So we're going to talk about how to do that today. I'm going to make some practical suggestions, like we did last week about the past. But first, we're going to look at Scripture and see Paul. Did you know that the Apostle Paul made some suggestions about how you deal with family at Christmas time? You didn't know he did that, did you? He did. He talked about how to handle family at Christmas time. And here's how you can know that he did that. If you read the New Testament, Jesus, when he was on earth, basically said to his followers, those who would believe on him and become Jesus' followers and trust in him, that he was giving them new marching orders. He says, I'm giving you a brand new commandment that you would love each other in the way that I loved you. Because the marching orders were not the ancient Hebrew scriptures. For a lot of people who were Jewish but rejected Judaism as a religion, or they were Gentiles and they were not raised in that culture, and they didn't have the national laws that governed the nation of Israel, these people didn't know what to do with all of those old writings. But Jesus said, follow me, believe in me for salvation, and follow me. And he gave them a new commandment. He says, love each other in the way that I have loved you. And every New Testament writer since Jesus did the same thing. They basically applied Jesus' new ethic, love each other the way that Jesus loved us. They applied that over and over and over again to their audience. Now, they referred back to the ancient Hebrew scriptures for illustrations and examples, but they applied Jesus' love one another commandment. And so they taught us a whole bunch of one another's. Be kind to one another. Forgive one another. Be gracious to one another. Right? All those one another's. How to one another, one another. And the reason I bring that up is because Paul was one of the writers in the New Testament, the early church leaders, who taught us how to do what Jesus told us to do, to love one another. And what that looks like, how to one another, one another. And as you read his writings, here's what you have to realize, and so do I, that of all the one another's in your life, the most important one another's are those who are your family and those closest to you. In other words, when I'm told how to treat other people, that is not primarily for how I treat the guy down the street, although that definitely applies to how I treat the guy down the street. The primary application of how to treat one another is those people I am closest to. So while I want to learn from the scriptures how to treat other people down the road or across the auditorium, they all apply to how I treat my wife, my children, your husband, your parents, whatever it may be. Now, here's what I want to say about that. People will once in a while say, the Bible doesn't have a lot to say about marriage. And it does say a lot about marriage. Paul writes about it. Peter writes about it. But I want to suggest to you that it says an awful lot more than that about marriage. Every time the Bible tells us, and the scriptures tell us, how to get along with people, your spouse is a people in your life. All of it applies to your marriage. So there's actually a whole lot of material about marriage in the Bible and family. So therefore, when Paul tells us how to treat other people, he's telling us how to treat our family, especially at Christmas time, when emotions can sometimes get wild, when you spend a lot of time with people that you don't always see that much. So let's see what Paul says in Romans chapter 12. We'll begin in verse 9 today. And the funny thing about this verse is because some of us were like, okay, I'm going to see these people. I really don't like them. I kind of hate them. No, I don't hate them. I'm a Christian. I love them. I'll put a smile on my face and tell them that I love them. But here's what Paul said. Don't just pretend to love others. Romans 12, 9. Don't just pretend to love others. He said, instead, really love them. Really love them. I know that's hard for some people, right? But he says, really love them. And then he said this, hate what is wrong and hold tightly to what is good. Now, I have watched, in my years in the Christian world, I have watched that last part get abused over and over again. They're like, I love people, I just hate what's wrong, you know? It's the whole, I hate the sin and love the sinner. It's things we use that make us feel justified in how we treat other people by saying, I'm just busy hating what's wrong. But do they feel loved? Well, I love them. But do they feel loved? Here's the thing. We can't hide behind an unloving spirit by saying we're just taking a stand for what's right. Because the question is not, what do you think you meant? The question is, how do people feel? Do people around you feel cared for or put down, feel cared for or judged? That's the key. And if you think you're justified behaving one way, but you're not leaving the impression that and letting people know they're cared for and loved, then we're missing the mark, no matter how righteous we feel. The next verse says this, verse 10. He says, love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. A lot of the angry people who like to do the whole, I just stand for what's right view of life would do great when they get together with family to remember this part of the verse. Take delight in honoring each other. Can you honor those people you disagree with? Can you honor those people that bother you? Can you do this well? We should all take delight in honoring each other. Now, I'm going to keep going here. Verse 14, let's go down to verse 14. Bless those who persecute you. And that's funny because persecute's a strong word. But I have been around Christians my entire life, mostly. And I'm going to tell you something. Christians can really get a good persecution complex pretty easily. So it's crazy. Like I know a lot of religious people who spend a lot of their time pretty much, you know, putting others down but feeling persecuted by everybody else. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've seen that. They're like the critical, grumpy people, but they're the ones who are persecuted, you know? And we do that with our family sometimes. They're the one who's not loving me very well. My family's not treating me right, and they have all those earlier verses, that's my relatives. What about me? I'm the good one. They persecute me. Well, if they do, if that's really true, Paul says bless them. Bless those who persecute you. Now, he's going to tell us what that looks like, but that's hard. But then he goes further. He says, don't curse them. Like, don't sit there and say, people in my life. Don't curse them. Pray. Pray that God will bless them. That is extra challenging right there, isn't it? It's one thing to bless them. It's another thing to pray that God will bless them. Like, I'll bless them, and I'll pray that God will get them, right? I've learned a long time ago that we're bad sometimes at praying for other people. Like, we'll say to somebody, you've got problems with somebody in their life, pray for your enemies. Oh, I'll pray for my enemies, all right. God smite them. You know, that's what I'm praying. If they're authority or leadership or whatever, God zap them off everything and those are my prayers. What's interesting is when Jesus taught to pray for your enemies, he was always teaching to pray for them, not pray against them or pray at them. Paul says, pray that God will bless them. In other words, it's one thing to say, I'm going to bless them, but if I pray that God will bless them, what if he does? I don't want him to answer that prayer. Like, I don't like them. But boy, I'll tell you, something changes in our spirit when we begin to pray that God will bless those people that we don't get along with, to pray for those people that we don't like. Pray that God will bless them. Verse 15, let's go on. He says, be happy with those who are happy and weep with those who weep. That is great advice for Christmas get-togethers. Because it's teaching us to be empathetic and care about the other person. Now, I've learned a long time ago as well. I've been saying that a lot today. I learned a lot of things a long time ago, apparently. I'm old. But here's the thing. It's easier to weep with those who weep than it is to rejoice with those who rejoice. And it's easier to weep with those who weep than it is to be happy with those who are happy. Because if they're weeping, I'm like, oh, that's terrible. I'm so sorry. Oh, I hope that doesn't happen to me. I'm sad because I don't want that to happen to me too. Oh, I'm so sad. But if they're happy, we're like, what? Why didn't that happen to me? You got blessings? Your life is good? I'm jealous. And so it's easier to weep with those who weep than to be happy for other people who have it really good. But I'm suggesting that at Christmas time, don't walk in and try to be the star of the show. Weep. Listen to them. If they're having a rough time, just listen. You don't have to sit there and say, oh, you think you have problems? Well, suck it up, buttercup. I got worse problems than you do. Let me tell you about my problems. No, just weep with those who weep. Be happy with those who are happy. If they're winning, say, man, that's awesome that you're winning. I'm so happy for you. Here's what we tend to do. We tend to say, oh, yeah, you got it good in life? Well, there's you, there's me. See the difference? There's you, there's me. I got to one-up you because I got it better. So don't be the person who is making it about you. Man, just celebrate them. Listen to their stories. Be happy with them. Weep with them if they're sad. Be rejoicing if they're rejoicing. Take an interest in them. Let's keep going. Verse 16, live in harmony with each other. Ooh. Live in harmony with each other. That's tricky when Uncle Jim and Aunt Sue show up and you know how that's going to go. See, that's impossible, Arlen. I know, but check it out. We can do it. But here's how. Don't be too proud. Don't be too proud to enjoy the company of ordinary people. In other words, that sounds so condescending, but some of us think that way if we're honest. Like, if you ever said what you're really thinking, it's like these simpletons in my family, these underdeveloped Neanderthals in my family who don't know how, they don't see it like I do. It's so easy to think of ourselves as intellectually or morally or whatever superior. Christians are really good at that sometimes, unfortunately. We have the right worldview. And so we get proud. Don't be too proud. To just enjoy people. Just to enjoy people for who they are and not to think of yourself in those terms. In fact, Paul says, don't think you know it all. Don't think that you know it all because you don't. No one's got a corner on all the truth, right? We're all struggling. We're all a little dense. Keep going. Verse 17. Never pay back evil with more evil. Do things in such a way that everyone can see you are honorable. In other words, if someone wrongs you, you don't return the favor. If someone passes you the mashed potatoes with a bad attitude, you don't pass them the cranberry sauce with a bad attitude back. If they gossip, say them to your sibling about you, you don't tell something back about them. You just don't play that game. You say, but if I don't do that, they're gonna win. Win what? Like, here's the thing. Do what's honorable. The honorable thing to do is to be above that fray, just to be a better person, and let the long run. I always say this all the time. Time will validate you. Let the long run work itself out, but do the honorable thing, and don't fight evil with more evil. In fact, he says in verse 18, do all that you can do to live in peace with everyone. Aren't you glad that he didn't say command, live in peace with everyone, because it's impossible to live in peace with everyone. No matter how much you try, for some of you, that manipulative parent that made growing up so hard and still does, you can't live in perfect peace with them because of things that you can't control on their end. That child that has gone a different direction and is angry and wants to come back and fight for their identity in being different than you or their politics or whatever it may be, you can't control that. That Uncle Jim, he's going to be Uncle Jim. Aunt Sue's going to be Aunt Sue. What Paul is saying is this, do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. In other words, what you can do is you can walk in and say, Lord, I'm going to do my part well. I'm not going to throw the first grenade. I'm not going to bring up the little jab, jab, punch over here and then walk back after the fight got started and say, what? You know, I can't control what everyone else does, but I can do all I can do to live in peace with everyone. That's on me. And when God, who is my witness, knows that I did my part, we can all do that. Verse 19, dear friends, never take revenge. Leave that to the righteous anger of God. For the scriptures say, I will take revenge, I will pay them back, says the Lord. In other words, Paul's saying, don't take matters into your own hands. Let God right the wrongs. Don't do it yourself. Our tendency is to get our hands, our sleeves rolled up, and put our hands in and try to fix the problems of people that make us mad or hurt us or whatever. And God says, take your hands off of that. Let me make things right. In my way, in my time, don't do it for me. You say, well, fine, Paul. What am I supposed to do in the meantime? If I can't put my hands in the situation and fix it, what do I do? Just stand back here with my arms crossed and ignore them and wait for you to do something, God? No. It's better than that, or worse, depending on how you look at it. He says in the next verse, instead, if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. In other words, he says, while you're letting God do his part and not, you're not getting your hands into God's business, you're stepping back and saying, God, you can fix the wrongs. What you do in the meantime, you don't sit back on the side with your arms crossed. You roll up your sleeves and serve those people that bother you even. You serve them. If they're hungry, feed them. If they're thirsty, give them something. Serve people. Serve people you don't like. Serve people who don't like you. Just serve. You say, well, what? That's crazy talk. Who does that? Jesus did that for all of us. And that's the beautiful thing about the gospel. We're called to be like him. And he says, in doing this, you will heap burning coals of shame on their heads. In other words, what he's saying, and that's a misunderstood statement sometimes, he's saying that when you will do the right thing to people, if you want to see it get better, the way to make it better is not to hurt them back. That doesn't fix anything. To make them feel the pain they made you feel, that doesn't help anybody. What makes a difference is when you are treat them well, when they're not treating you well, and they start to say, wow, I've been so unkind and they've been so good to me still. Wow, I feel ashamed of my behavior. Wow. The best way to get someone back is to change the conversational tone, to change the behavior, to do the hard thing. And it is a hard thing to do because our flesh gets in the way. Our, as you said earlier, Nathan, our ego gets in the way. That's the problem sometimes. I want everyone to know where I'm coming from, see my point, not feel like they got the last word on me. And that's just not the way to be. There's no win in ego. And then he closes by saying this, don't let evil conquer you. In other words, don't let evil, don't let bad practices make you the same way. I can't tell you how tragic it is for me to see Christians say, we're going to behave in any number of ways, culturally, at the job site, in business practices, in our political views. We're going to behave like the people that we on the other side because they're wrong, so you got to fight dirty to get ahead. We let evil change how we behave. Like, what is that? How's that helping anybody? You don't do that. You don't become like the bad around you that frustrates you. You conquer evil by doing good. You conquer evil by being better. You conquer evil by being like Jesus in this world. We got to find a better way forward. So that's Paul's advice. Now, we can go home right now pretty early for our usual get-out time, and some of you will be like, that sounds good to me. Let's go. But here's the thing. Because I'm long-winded, I want to add some things to what Paul said. They're not scripture like Paul's words. But I think if Paul was here 2,000 years later, Paul, who was speaking into a first century sitting 2,000 years ago, might speak to American Christians in an Americanized, Christianized, first world, developed nation country where we're richer than we think we are. He might say different things to us about how we get along, especially during the holidays. And so in light of what he said there and what the scriptures teach us, I want to give you some modern-day practical advice about how to deal with the ghosts of Christmas present, those people who are going to come to haunt your holidays, or you're going to their place to be haunted this holiday season. How do we get along with what Paul, first of all, do what Paul said. He's smart. He was filled with the Holy Spirit as he wrote those words. But also, consider these few things and take these home, write these down and take these home with you. And take those home with you. Write those down and study those this week. But first of all, I want to say this. Some things to do this holiday season if you have problems with relationships in your life that are difficult. First thing is this. Prepare your heart. Prepare your heart. In other words, don't walk into this thing and get taken off guard. If you're a mom or a dad, or if you're a husband and wife, and you've ever had tension in your marriage or with your kids, you probably know what it's like for something to happen in the heat of the moment, and you weren't braced for that, and emotions are flying high, and you can't even fix it at the moment because you can't get to the root of it because everyone's too emotional. So you have to wait like maybe a couple weeks later and say, hey, let's go have some ice cream. Hey, That was crazy, wasn't it? Now that we've calmed down and it's behind us, how can we avoid that happening again that way? Because that was insane. It's trying to get ahead of the battle. And so if you're going to go to Christmas and you know you're walking into things that are always tension and always dramatic, and Uncle Jim's going to say his views ad nauseum, and you're going to be so sick of hearing them in 2 minutes, and Aunt Sue's going to ask you why your kids are just the way they're dressed or something that she thinks is important, and that relative that hurt you is going to be there, and that other relative that you think judges you is going to be there, and the other relative that's a total idiot is going to be there. If you know it's going to come, don't walk in blind. Prepare your heart. Prepare. How do you do that? Well, read Paul's words. Maybe write those all down. Write those all down. And what did Paul say in Romans 12? And do that. But second of all, you can prepare your heart by praying. Pray. And again, don't pray. Don't say, God, straighten those jerks out and make my Christmas nicer. That's not how you pray. Here's how you pray. Lord, you know that I'm going to see somebody, then there's some old hurts and wounds there. You know the bad history. God, and you know how Christmas went 2 years ago. I don't want a repeat of that. God, would you please work in their heart and in my heart? If there's something that they're wrong about, would you please show them kindly? And if there's something I'm wrong about, would you please show me kindly? And Lord, if we can't agree, would you just pour grace over the whole gathering so that we don't have tension? And God, would you help me to say the right things and help me as much as is possible to do all I can do to live at peace? And would you please just bless this and just help me prepare and read the scriptures that we just read earlier and pray and walk into that thing prepared. Prepare your heart for the tension. Because look, Christmas is too awesome to spend the whole year, every year, miserable. And I know that last week it's the loved ones we lost, but we can celebrate their life and enjoy the time we have. I know it's the people that you still have to live with that are difficult, but we can enjoy the goodness of God in the lives of those around us that are difficult. And we should have a good time, but what will help you to do is to pray before you go and prepare your heart to see them. See, but Arlen, I'm just worried. I can't help it. It ruins my leading up to Christmas is ruined by worrying about our get-together because I'm dreading it. But I'm saying stop worrying about it. In fact, Paul said stop worrying about it. Paul, to the Philippian believers in Philippians 4:6, he said, don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. He says, tell God what you need and thank him for all he has done. So if you got some things going on, just don't worry about it. Talk to God about it. And then thank him for all he's done. So when you do that, here's the secret sauce. Then, he says, you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything you can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. In other words, if you want peace, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. If you want peace this Christmas season, you can get God's peace by taking those things that you worry about and pray about them and give thanks. Seek God out. So prepare your heart. How? By praying. How else? Well, we just saw it. By being thankful. Be thankful for those people in your life that you find difficult. Say, Arlen, do you know my dad? Arlen, do you know my sister? Arlen, do you know my Uncle Jim? Be thankful for them. Here's what I've learned, and this is, I've learned it the hard way. I've done this wrong a lot. But it's easy. It's easy for human beings to be upset. Someone could do 10 good things for us and do one bad thing, and all we can think about is the one bad thing. That's just how humans can be. My suggestion is the opposite, and this is hard. If they've done 10 bad things and only one good thing, think about the one good thing. Can you find a room to be thankful for that person still? If as a parent, did they raise you and keep you alive and fed and clothed? I mean, are you here because of them? If it's a child, did they bring you much joy early in life and you have a lot of good memories? If it's a relative, what's the good you could find? Be thankful. Be thankful for them this holiday season. Find Thanksgiving. Prepare your heart. How? By praying, by being thankful for them. Here's the next one. This is the big one. I'm warning you. This is my big point right here. Here goes. Avoid arguments over controversial topics. Now, I'm going to take a few minutes here to give you some sub-thoughts about how to do this. This might be the best thing you can do this Christmas season. Avoid arguments over controversial topics. For some people, family get-togethers mean it's time to roll up the sleeves and fight. Now, I know that there are some people out there, they can get together and they can debate different ideas, and they are just wired to where, no, we all, this is, there's no drama, we're fine. We just want to talk about different ideas. That if you're both that way, fine. But what I've learned in most families that I've dealt with through the years is that it's usually not that way for both parties. Usually both get mad at each other, or one does. And even if you like the debate, if the person that you're talking to in your family doesn't, they just like, and they dread you, and they dread it, and they just feel put down, and they just feel frustrated. Maybe you don't even know it because you don't have self-awareness. But we don't want to have this going on in the family. And it's not fun if it's not fun for everybody. So avoid arguments over controversial topics. What are controversial topics? Well, for a lot of people, it's politics and religion, right? And politics has about 18,000 nuances of frustration right now. Just ask anybody; they'll tell you what's their political views, and probably with blood rising and their boiling in their body. But forget politics, religion. You know what's crazy? I've seen even religious people in my life who would rather see their loved one atheistic and living in some reckless life of sin and degradation. Because then they feel morally superior to that loved one. They'd rather see them in that state than to see their relative spiritual in a different context than they are. To see them in a different denominational or different religious practice than they are. Because then they're like, well, wait a minute now, you're wrong and I'm right. And so they want to fight about how we worship God better than you do. People fight about religion. They fight about politics. Sometimes you fight about how you raise your kids. Why don't you have your kids on a schedule? Why are you such a boring parent? Why don't you? It's crazy, the controversies that families have about how they do family or how they do politics, how they do religion. Just, if it's controversial, just avoid it. Now you say, okay, fine, that's nice, Arlen, cool sentiment, but what if I want to avoid it, but Uncle Jim won't let me? What do you do if they bring it to you? So here's the sub-thoughts to take home with you today. I'll go give them to you as quickly as I can so we can move on. First of all is this, attempt to change the subject. Attempt to change the subject. If they bring up a subject that you don't want to talk about, just change the subject. It's like, hey, well, do you think about this whole thing in America? Da, 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 da. Hey, how about those bears? Maybe don't go there. That's not a very happy subject these days. I don't know, something, to change the subject. Now, if you try to change the subject and they bring it back home, they're like, okay, yes, nice. Back to my point. What do you think about? What do you do next? You agree where you can and then change the subject. This is a beautiful little tool. You can probably find something you agree with them on, even in things you don't agree with them on. And find that common ground and just agree about that and then move on. Now look, I understand, I get this. For some of you, there's controversial topics that you have family on opposite ends of your views, and it just drives you crazy. And look, but if you don't even see, then you're mad at Facebook about it. You're mad at over Facebook. By the way, let me give you a great secret to life. You can be friends with somebody and unfollow them and not see their feed. If you unfriend them, they'll feel hurt by you, so you don't want to do that. But I have people I love in my family. Hopefully they're not going to hear me say this, I guess. But I just unfollowed them because I can't. You say, well, why'd you unfollow? Because I can't read their crazy rantings and not have a real issues in my heart towards that. And I love them too much to be mad every time I open up social media. So I just, I don't see it. But you can't, when you go there, you can't avoid them, right? So change the subject. And if they won't let you change the subject, just say, hey, well, I think we can both agree, yada, yada. If it's political, say, well, I think we can both agree that that's, you're right. No one on either side should do that. And then change the subject. If it's religious, oh, I think we both agree we should worship God the right way. And change the subject. I mean, whatever it is, agree where you can. Hopefully that makes them happy. Change the subject. If that doesn't work and they want to bring it back and say, yeah, but, because they probably know that there's a deeper nuance there that they don't agree with you on. Number three, acknowledge your differences. This is a beautiful tool that if you can't get out of the subject, look at them and say, hey, listen, we just don't agree on this. Let's be honest here. You might not know that we don't, but now you do, or you probably do. That's why you're trying to have this conversation. We just don't agree on this politically. We don't agree on this religiously. We just don't agree on this about how we do raise our kids or whatever it may be. We just see it differently. And so we're not gonna change each other's minds, right? No one changes each other's minds yelling at Christmas or some other time. I'm not going to change your mind. No, you won't change mine. I won't, and you won't change mine either. So we just differ. Let's just not go there today. Let's not make this let's not wreck this get-together. In fact, this goes with our next point, and that is this. Affirm their value. One of the best things you could do is say to them, look, we don't agree on this issue, but I love you too much to destroy our relationship over our differences. This is a big point here, folks, to look at them and say, listen, I love you too much to say some things that will hurt you or offend you or make you mad, or to be mad at you for what things you said to me, or to make it personal. We don't see each other enough. We're together. We just see this differently. These are points that we're making here. I have one more to make, but I'm going to leave the screen and give you a statement that I want you to remember and embrace in your life, and that is this. You are more important than my view. You are more important than my view. Boy, that's a good word right there. Now, you got to believe it first. By the way, if you can't look at the people in your life and say that that relationship is more important to you than all your opinions, then the first thing you need to do is get a heart checkup done. If your opinions are more important to you than the people, you got to fix that problem in your own heart first. But if you come to the spot where you realize that the people around you are more valuable than your thoughts on the matter, then look at them and be able to say that to them. Say, hey, listen, we just differ on this, and you're too important to me for us to just ruin this time because I love you. You are more important than my view. Let's not get into this right now. So what do we do to avoid those conversations, avoid arguments or controversial subjects? Well, we can attempt to change the subject. We can agree where we can and then change the subject. We can acknowledge our differences. We can affirm their value. And then last of all, away you must walk. That's my Yoda version right there. I wanted them to all end in A's, and so I had to go Yoda there so make it work. Away you must walk, okay? I mean, if nothing else works, walk away. You say, you mean like walk out of the conversation while they're trying to have it with me? Mm-hmm. You say, but they'll be offended by that. Listen, if they are so self-unaware, and emotionally unintelligent that they can't take the first four hints, and they're gonna be mad at you for walking away, here's the thing. They're gonna be mad at you for staying there and talking about it too. Because you're going to say your own opinion. They're going to be mad at that. And then you're going to eventually still walk away in the end. And it's going to be way worse. So just walk. Say, hey, listen, I changed the subject. You brought it back. I agreed with you. Changed the subject. You brought it back. We just differ. Acknowledge that we differ. Let me affirm I value you. I don't want to fight. Oh, I want to fight. Well, okay, I'm leaving. Don't you walk away from me. Okay, I'm walking away. And you'll get over that instead of the things I'm going to say. Because that's what happens. Don't you know this is what happens in relationships? Happens in marriage all the time. Couples will come to counselors because they had a big fight. And the initial issue that caused the fight now seems petty and trivial, but all the things they said and did to each other in retaliation afterwards is the real problem, right? So staying and having this argument is probably going to make it way worse than just walking away. Just walk away. Away you must walk. Just go. And say, well, why? Because there's nothing. And by the way, if you're the person, maybe we need self-awareness. If someone in our life is trying to change the subject, we gotta say, why are they changing the subject? Am I stepping on ground I shouldn't be stepping on? Light bulb. If I bring it back and they agree to, or they can't change the subject, are they, is this me? That'll be like a wake-up moment. If they say, hey, look, we just differ on this, but let's not just fight about it, that should be like, if we're emotionally intelligent, we should be like, oh, wow. What have I done? You know, let's not go there. If they got to walk away from us, we need to do some self-reflection, right? Hopefully that's not us. But if it is, let's fix that. And if it's them, walk away. Because there's some people that just want to brawl. They just want to fight. They just want to watch the world, or they just want to be angry at, hacked off at everyone, including you, if you don't see it their way. And I want to say this to you about that. George Bernard Shaw once made a statement. He said, never wrestle with a pig because you'll both end up dirty and the pig likes it. I am not saying any of your relatives are pigs. It's just good advice for everybody. However, also good advice is this. You'll rarely regret the words that you don't say. Many people have said things in the heat of the moment or typed things in the comment section in the heat of the moment and regretted it afterwards. But you'll rarely regret the words you don't say. Hold your tongue. Make sure you're in the right frame of mind and the right spirit. So I'm giving you some big points. I have one more. We said earlier, prepare your heart before you get to that Christmas get-together. Prepare your heart. How? By praying, by being thankful for the people that you're going to see, by avoiding arguments over controversial topics. One last thought, and I'm done. Number five, take a genuine interest in them. Take a genuine interest in them. That's what the Apostle Paul was saying when he said, be happy with those who are happy and weep with those who weep. Our tendency is to walk in and say, it's all about me. Hey, check out my cool life or check out my miserable life. Feel bad for me, be happy for me, be in awe of me. I don't care about me. And the me monster kicks in. And Paul was saying, go in there and be happy for their successes and be sad for their sorrows and take a genuine interest in them. This takes work. But this is a great idea for all parts of our life. Did you know that 100 years ago, Dale Carnegie wrote a book called How to Win Friends and Influence People? It's 100 years old almost now. And everyone should read it. And in there, he basically said, one of his many points was that you don't have to be a talker to be considered a great conversationalist. If you'll go to people and let them talk, and you'll be interested in what they're saying, and you'll say those magical, magical words that we all ought to learn, please tell me more. And you'll say, oh, tell me more about that. And you'll ask questions and you'll be interested. You walk away, they'll say, well, they were a great conversationalist. You didn't say much of anything. You just listened to them and were interested. But it works. And you say, well, what's in it for me? Well, first of all, it might change your heart. It will make them feel like you care about them, which you should, and it will help you shift your perspective of being frustrated by somebody to being interested in them because you chose to be interested in them. When I grew up, my pastor growing up used to make a statement. He said, people are not bad. They're just broken. Now, I don't know if that means anything to you, but that meant a lot to me growing up. Because we tend to see people as good or bad. They're either good or they're bad. When I grew up, TV shows were this way, and books. There was the good guys and the bad guys. And the good guys were always good, and the bad guys were always bad, right? And then the problem is that we put ourselves into the story, and since we see ourselves as the good guys, whoever's on the wrong side of us must be always the bad guys. I love stories that create a bit of a nuance where there's no clear always good, always bad people, because we're not. In fact, one of the great things about literature and books and even movies lately and shows is that they allow you to see somebody that is broken and becomes the bad guy, but you see it happen and you sympathize with them, and you don't cheer for what they do, but you cheer for the person somehow still and hoping that they come out of it okay. Because that's life. And we can't do that when we see people as bad instead of seeing them as broken. And when you realize that people are just, hey, there's a reason. Maybe your dad was the way he was because he had a pretty rotten upbringing himself. And he never healed properly and he walked into adulthood dysfunctional, and then he had kids when he was too young to know better and you suffered the consequences. It doesn't make it right. It makes you have a heart that's tender versus just a heart that's angry. Maybe you look at that person and say, what made them feel this way? What did they experience in life that brought them to this point? People are not bad, they're broken. But if you can see that in this world, we'll be better off for it. So take a genuine interest in people. Ask them questions. Tell me more. That's a great statement. Tell me more. In fact, Uncle Jim, how did you ever meet Aunt Sue? Tell me that story. I never heard that story before. Hey, Dad, Mom, what were your favorite Christmas memories growing up? What, you had a car accident when you were 19? Whoa, you were okay. Tell me about that. I'm interested. You got paid how much per hour at your first job, you know? Hey, kids, what's going on in your life? Oh, yeah, who are your coworkers? What do you do? Just be interested. Take an interest in people and listen. And when they talk, say, tell me more. And if you take an interest in them and don't see them as, find a way to change your heart. Not only will it warm them up, it'll warm you up towards them because you shifted. Here's the question. Can you find it in your heart to wonder what happened to them that left them the way that they are, that frustrates you? And take an interest in them, just to be interested in them, in their good and their bad as well. If there's no explanation about someone in your life that could change your heart towards them, perhaps the problem is our hearts, not them. Here's a great thing to think about. My perspective of you can be changed without you changing at all. My perspective of you can be changed without you changing at all. I can change my perspective even if you don't change at all. The secret is to take an interest in people that we'd otherwise be annoyed by and care. It doesn't mean that they're going to become saints or perfect people or not annoying. It means that we can change our perspective and live from a better vantage point. So take an interest in them. Or as Paul said, be happy with them, weep with them, care about them. Those are some suggestions that I'm going to be done today. Those are some suggestions for you this Christmas season. We're talking about a haunted Christmas. And I understand that for many of us, December comes around and it feels haunted. You're haunted by the ghosts of Christmas past. Loved ones we mentioned last week who died and they're gone and you miss them and you're sad. I understand. We're haunted by the ghosts of Christmas present, people who we're going to see that we dread to see. But this should not be a miserable time of year. It should be a happy Christmas, and it can be. If you're a Jesus follower, those who've passed away before us, we can see them again one day. And if you are a Jesus follower, those people that are difficult in your life, you can love them the way that God loves us. Now, here's the thing. We have one more lesson to do next week, and every week's a different topic. We'll finish this series before Christmas. But for today, as we wrap up, I want you to think about this. For a God who is a heavenly father, he sure has to put up with messy family sometimes, doesn't he? He sure puts up with messy family, meaning me and you. Our heavenly father puts up with a lot of messiness from all of us, doesn't he? And I'm sure glad he does. In fact, the point of the Christmas season is Jesus stepped willingly into a world of dysfunctional relationships, of people who walked away from God, walked away, to come down and say, let me pay for your wrongdoings. Let me suffer for your consequences. Let me show you that we want you. God wants you back. Jesus came down and humbled himself to people who were too proud to follow him. He came down and served people who turned their backs on him. He came to his own, John wrote, and his own did not receive him. But he came down into a world of dysfunctional relationships to bring us back to God because he loved us. That's the Christmas story. That's the Christian story. And I'm asking us today, as Jesus followers, let's be more like him. That's doable. It's not easy. But following Jesus means taking up your cross and denying yourself and following him. We can do that and make this Christmas less haunted, but the people that are present, and more happy because he's present with us and he loves us so much through all of our dysfunction and all of our difficulty. And we could be like him today.